started last week with it. I am not totally satisfied that we have exhausted the first couple of verses. I think these are very, very crucial words for the deepest essence of what the faith is all about. Perhaps I should rather say what our relationship to Christ consists of, what we can expect in that relationship, what God expects of us. Paul says, the translation, "I beseech you, brothers," is not a bad translation. The interesting point is that the verb form for beseech here is the verb to the word for paraclete or comforter, spirit. A Greek word, if I can be a little pedantic here, is parakletos. And this verb is parakaleo. And by the way, it's the same word that is translated to exhort in other places. I'm not sure that that is a happy translation, exhort. Because the word really carries more of an impact of a strengthening than it does of a command or a mandatory thing. I would thus say, in keeping with what follows, the phrase that follows here, I think we're better off with a word that conveys an idea of a strengthening. The word comfort hardly seems a good way to translate it. I comfort you, brothers, although where he says comfort one another with these words, the same words there in 1 Thessalonians 4. He speaks of the resurrection and the comfort we have in the second coming, and he says, "Wherefore comfort one another with these words," the same word. So while it isn't really a smooth translation, yet the idea here is Paul is saying, "I submit to you, brothers, for your strengthening." If we can use a circumlocution like that, "I submit to you, brothers, for your strengthening, that you, through the mercies of God, through the compassion of God, present your bodies a living sacrifice." Now that whole structure there takes the weight off of the idea of a command coming through, you say, of an obligatory thing. He's not saying, "Now look here, I've got this is your responsibility." He's not saying that so much as he is saying, "I'm offering you something here that is vital for your well-being. And it is based upon the compassion of God." Oikotermon, best translated probably compassion. It has nothing to do here with obligation, more with bringing you into the full realization of that relationship you may bear to Christ. Perhaps it is like the situation of a person becoming citizen of the United States, perhaps we should say rather a territory becoming a state, such as Hawaii or Alaska. The moment they become a state, there is, to be sure, an obligation involved. But it is, on the other hand, very much a privilege that carries with it many benefits. Because by being one of the family, so to speak, they become heir to, or they become the recipients of, the protective care of the United States government. So all the benefits that accrue to someone that is part of this country. So Paul then is setting up a condition of benefit and blessing and privilege more than he is setting up a condition of obligation. So I want us to carry that weight through this thing. And he says that you should present your bodies a living sacrifice. Going back to the compassion or the mercy of God, in the overall picture, the mercy of God is exhibited by our being privileged to enter into an intimate relationship with him at all. The fact that he wants to take us on is a wonderful thing. It's a relationship that carries with it far more implication than we understand. For the eternal Godhead to allow us to become part of the team, part of the family, is remarkable. That he wants us in that kind of close relationship. So now he speaks of presenting our bodies to him as a living sacrifice. There are some that say the word bodies here refers to the body of believers. That's possible. I rather think that the word sacrifice somewhat precludes this, but it isn't a fixed point. I wouldn't really say that it was impossible this could mean the bodies of believers, because he does go on after this to speak about the body as a functioning organism. That is, have bodies of believers, the body of believers coming together. But I rather doubt it, in as much as he would be more likely using the word body to refer to the church as a whole, the church at large, rather than an individual group within a city. Certainly if he's writing to one city where the body tended to be unified, in other words, you had the church at Rome, the church at Ephesus, the church at Laodicea, or rather, well, it was there too, the church at Galatia. You did not tend then to speak about the churches of Rome or the churches of Ephesus, because there was not the same division that we have today. Now, I'm analyzing this and digging into it a little bit, because this is crucial. This verse is crucial for the nature of our relationship to Christ, and both our obligations and our privileges in that relationship. Now, the word body seems to be, you would think that the Lord would be saying to you, present your souls or your spirits in a way. Yet, on the other hand, the word bodies is in keeping with the nature of sacrifice, where you sacrifice a lamb or an ox or whatever. You're talking about a bodily sacrifice that is given. But whatever the word ultimately means, the implication is still the same, that we human beings are encouraged to put ourselves to join, shall I say, the flock, to be identified with the sacrifice, which was a sacrifice without blemish. To be part of the sacrifice to God, you have to be without blemish, which we are in Christ. There are some institutions in this country that you are not invited to join without certain qualifications. For example, Phi Beta Kappa people do not join the Phi Beta Kappa fraternity on the basis of how much beer they can drink, which may be the way you are invited to join Sigma Chi, some of these different ones, Tri Delta, whatever. You're invited to join these fraternities on the basis of your socialization process. You are a social climber, and they think you climbed high enough, they'll invite you to join the fraternity. But a Phi Beta Kappa has to have a scholastic record to go along with it. Now, I say this to point out that to be invited to join the fraternity of believers, to be invited to identify yourself as a sacrifice worthy of God, is itself a tremendous thing, and could only be possible on the strength of the statement of Christ that he will present us without spot and blemish. You may come in a scraggly little lamb with a dirty coat and scratches and bruises, but by the time the Lord is through with you, you will be without spot and without blemish, and therefore a fit sacrifice for God. Now, in that connection, what does it mean to present yourself as such a sacrifice? Well, the Greek text here uses a word which means sort of to stand by, like the reviewing stand. But you step up and you present yourself, and you say, here I am. Now, what is your credential? Just like, in a way, present yourself to the to a king or to the Queen of England or something like that. Although it carries more weight because this is a matter of presenting yourself as a living sacrifice. In a way, you almost assume the position of the lamb that was sacrificed. But you present yourself. Now, it is up, so you stand by. It is up to the one to whom you present yourself to make use of you according to his purpose. You do not come to God with your list of what you're going to do for him. You come to him. He gives you the list. He is the one that uses you. You don't come up with a preconceived notion of what he ought to use you for. I've never been keen about the idea of young people offering themselves for missionary service, unless there's a very, very strong preconditioning here where they really know the Lord has called them to. I am more in favor of them presenting themselves to the Lord and asking him to use them in any way he wants. You don't know what he may want. And a young person can pop up and say, oh yes, I'm going to be an evangelist. Well, you don't really know what you're going to be. The call here is not to present yourself for evangelistic effort or to be a personal worker or an intercessor or whatever, but just to present yourself. Let the Lord divide us as he will. Let the Lord be the one to distribute us to the place that we should be used or to identify that place for us. One might not even know this until they're 25, 30 years old, maybe 40. You don't know what the Lord is preparing you for. This is very clear to us here. The thing to do is merely to present yourself to the Lord. The housewife that cares for the home is just as much a full-time servant of the Lord as the person who goes out to some kind of public ministry, because she's fitting into the body the way the Lord wants her. And she is therefore just as important as the evangelist or the teacher that is public. We've got to readjust our set of values here. We've got to get rid of Christian VIPism and get into the point that we all are placed in the body as he will, as the Lord will. And you are just as much a member of the body if you are a thumb as if you are a nose or an eyeball or a hank of hair. You see, you're still as much part of the body. You can't say one is more honorable than another. The head has a responsibility to guide the body. Thus, you have Christ as the ultimate head, and you have headship within a family and headship within the church, and these people are given the responsibility of leadership, but that does not make them one whit more of value in God's sight than the one who moves along within a certain frame of reference that doesn't have much public ministry to it. Here tonight are numbers of people that have the Spirit of Christ in them. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here. I don't think anybody, except on the other side of the wall there, was collared and drugged here. Maybe some, I don't know. Most of you here, I'm sure, are, because the Spirit of the Lord is in you to come. Now that makes a very strong group. And each one lends his or her spirit to the body. You may feel that you did not do anything today that was notable for Christ. But that doesn't make any difference as far as your relation to the body is concerned. The thumb doesn't always have to be wagging to be valuable. You don't always have to be running or moving your feet for them to be regarded as a valuable part of you. And there's not any part of your body that the Lord has provided as a malleable unit that you can unhook your thumb and set it over here when you don't need it. their nose. You'd like to do that sometimes, hook it and set it on the table so it can learn to behave itself a little better. But so far, he has not provided us with that kind of thing. I suppose science may come up with that. They can put a quick coupling or something there for you. Your hose nose.
Snap-on tools.
So they make some kind of snap-on arrangement there, or interchange them, or swap them around. Get tired of your nose, you can swap somebody else. But if this seems a little bit, maybe a little bit ludicrous, but it does illustrate the ridiculousness of the attitude of the church in many respects about that same thing. Here's a person, as they say, put on the shelf, laid aside. Not a bit of it, you know. If you're sick at home in bed, you're no more laid aside than if you're sitting here on the Davenport or the floor or wherever you're in the meeting. You are always a part of the body and always as important, even if at the moment you're not in motion. It's just being there. I called your mind the analogy I've used a number of times in the past of the stool. I use that analogy because there's a certain interaction of elements in that stew that blend them inseparably. You can never separate the paprika from the beef stock once they're mixed together. It's all there. And it's blended together. You can't separate it. And the stew is ladled out to each bowl as all stew. I suppose if you're unfortunate and don't get a chunk of the meat, at least you get the flavor of the meat, the nourishment, the nutrition of the meat. Anyway, the point is that when you join the body of believers, you're there. You're part of it. Forever and anon. And whether you're in motion or not in motion, or whether you may think yourself a public figure or not a public figure, doesn't matter. You're part of the body integrally, and each one lends to another. And if the Lord really, as I think, although I have no chapter and verse for this, but I believe the Lord draws people together in groups suitable. I believe the Lord has drawn you people together. I don't think it has anything to do with whether you like this or that kind of thing. I think it's silly for people to travel about from one church to another, just coming here and there. I think the Lord wants them attached to a body of believers. And I certainly am the last one to say that he would not want you attached to some group that would represent a standard denominational group. We have people that come to the meetings here that are attached, especially in other cities, but we have people that are attached to other church groups. But if that's where the Lord wants a person, then that's where they ought to be. If the Lord has attached you to this fellowship, then this is where you ought to be. You may not always like the things I say. That's a pretty good batting average if you did. I don't often get 100% response. I say things at times that you don't like, probably. If you would get up and leave, you can leave the room. But I mean, if you would leave the groups just because you didn't like what I said, it would probably be a mistake. I don't always say things you won't like. But it would probably be a mistake, because if the Lord wants you here, it's not because of what I am. It's because this is the place where you have a family. If you don't like what somebody else does, it's not a thing to leave. But this is a common practice, very common in a church. Pastor says something or somebody says something that offends a person, and they say, well, I'm not going there anymore. And off they go. All of this contingent upon what you feel the Lord has called you to. That's not always fresh, easy to determine, but you need to be attached to the family of the Lord in an integral relationship with certain believers. Sometimes the Lord puts us together in improbable associations. That is, associations that might not normally be together apart from the Spirit. We tend to gravitate toward the people that maybe we are most like, and that is bad. We only multiply our own inadequacies. We have to be attached to people that can lend something to us, give us a different dimension. So the various types of people fit together because they become a richer dimension of believers, you see. All of this is germane to this chapter. You present yourself to Christ, and he attaches you to the body by his Spirit. Now, sometimes a member of the body gets a little out of joint, and they hang on the body like a sprained finger. every time you touch them, they yelp. I see it happening all the time. You know, this one or that one, they kind of slip off to the side for a while. But people have their way of doing that. You know, they slip off and pout a little bit. They don't come to a meeting because, well, I got the feelings hurt a little bit the last time. So they're like a sprained finger. You've got to kind of treat them gently for a while. Still, they're attached to the body. And just as important, you don't cut your finger off because it's sprained. We just have to blend together in a life situation as the Lord gives us that capacity. So thus, I'm saying that you put yourself in the body. That is, you identify with the body of believers. And in another sense, you present yourself to Christ and let him work you into the body as he sees fit. And be at peace about it. People once in a while, maybe quite often come and they say, well, you know, I don't feel useful. Or maybe you're supposed to just wait a little bit. Maybe the Lord has to kind of do some things with you until you're ready to do something more spectacular. But I don't think people ought to be ill at ease about that. When you're ready to be used, the Lord will put you out. And oftentimes you're used more than you realize. A word said to somebody, a prayer, a gift, loaf of bread, or whatever, may be quite useful in the Lord's sight. Perhaps in a way, just your presence lending support to the body is as useful as at this point the Lord wants you to be. Because later on, Paul will make a very clear point of the fact that he doesn't want you to go out beyond your faith. Many people, in the thought that they are not being useful, go out into projects that they're not qualified for. And of course, they get disappointed. They fall on their face. They have taken on too ambitious a project. Here are people that somebody is urging to teach a Sunday school class, but they feel uneasy about it. They don't feel qualified for it. So, you know, the old rah-rah pep talk from the coach, get out there, you can do it, you can do it. Oh, yeah, well, I've never taught a Sunday school class. That's all right, you can do it. Well, I've just been saved one day. That's all right, we need the Lord needs people. And that's amazing how quickly they put people in the field there. But if you don't feel at ease or feel a sense of responsibility or a sense of the Lord's guidance in it, don't do it. And people get pushed out to, you know, do personal work or calling on others or whatever. A lot of things you push to do that you really don't feel at ease doing, but you feel like from all the things that are hammered on you that you are slothful if you don't do it. I said before, the church can be an insatiable monster, just gobbling up everything you can give it. If you'd go there 8 nights a week, they'd take you, you know.
But others testify that this is what's...
Well, I've heard a lot of testimonies, and I hear them going one day and backing up the next. I don't go by, nor would I suggest that you would go by, another's testimony in the matter. I mean, here would be a person perhaps that is in a position of authority, like in the case of the prophets and teachers in Antioch that laid their hands on Paul and sent him out. Now, they felt confident that Paul should go. At the same time, Paul felt confident that he should go. The Lord is not going to witness to somebody else that you ought to do something without giving you the witness about it. I will say to you, without fear of contradiction from the Lord himself, and out of the experience of the Word and life, I will say to you right now, the Lord will give you the witness in your spirit when He's ready for you to do a particular thing. If He's ready for you to do it, you'll have a witness about it. You may even do it with a little fear and trembling, but you'll have a witness that now's the time. And if you don't get such a witness, hold on. And when you get to heaven, you tell the Lord that I said that. And I'll take the weight of it. I mean that seriously. I'll say, look, Lord, I told them that, so give me their stripes, whatever they might be. I'm going to be off in a cloud somewhere with all the responsibilities I bear for these matters. You may never see me up there. Be out in solitary confinement for all the things I said. I'm still going to say it anyway. It's the whole thrust of the Word of God that stands behind the point that the Lord is the one that gives the enabling, and when He's ready to give it, it's there. The Spirit is there to do it. Even Jesus said this, the finger or the power of God was there to heal. Even Jesus in His healing did not go beyond the power of the Father. As I hear, He said, I speak. I do as the Father enables me, so I do. It was the Spirit of God within Jesus that gave Him the impetus and the enabling to do His work. But when the Spirit did not indicate to go, He didn't go. As in the case of Lazarus, Jesus Himself stayed for 3 days and waited because He did not have the Spirit to go. I enjoin upon you the same thing. I say to you in the name of Christ, just hold steady. And let the Lord Himself give you the inner desire and spirit to do what He wants you to do. Now, I've followed this pattern in some very, very critical situations, crucial situations, that involved a great many other people, and involved money, and involved projects. And I've followed this thing that I just hold steady. So I really feel within me that it's time to move. And then when it's time to move, we go ahead. I really enjoy that upon you tonight. And my saying that will not lead you astray. If you do not feel a compunction within in a certain matter to do it, don't do it. Now, Paul says the same thing. He says, don't go beyond your faith. He says, I say by the grace which is given to me to everyone who is among you not to think of himself more highly or to have an over-exalted sense of what he should be doing, but to think soberly as God has measured out to each one the measure of faith. And then in other places here in the text, he speaks in a similar vein, not to move out beyond faith. And many a person has done that, feeling that if they don't move out, they're not showing faith. Many a church has launched out into an ambitious financial program, a building program or something, on the basis that if we hold back, we're not showing faith. We're gonna go ahead now. We're going to really trust God for this thing. They get themselves in many different kinds of binds over that sort of thing. All of this really coming down to a fine point here. When you accept Christ, or when you come to Christ, His Spirit then takes up an abode with you. And you belong to Him, but you may not have presented yourself to Him for His full function within you. You may be trying to do something on your own. You may be fighting it out yourself instead of presenting yourself to the Lord and saying, now, Lord, you make of me what you want me to be. Since the work of the ministry is often regarded like the harvesting of crops, in fact, the thing that we are all working with, the harvester mission, is really a mission to the harvester. And so we think of harvesting and the harvester. So, when a young man wants to go to work on a farm, he does not come to the farm, go to the barn and grab a hoe, and go out in the South 40 somewhere and start chopping weeds. He presents himself to the rancher. Here I am. What do you want to do with me? When I went to work on a ranch, I went via certain connections to the superintendent of the whole spread, which comprised quite a few thousand acres. And I presented myself to him, and he decided what part would be best for me to handle and what I should learn and all of that sort of thing. You are a harvester in a sense, and you come and present yourself to the Lord of the harvest. And you wait until he directs you where to go. If he doesn't come to you as quickly as you think he should, you don't just grab the rake and rush off to the field somewhere. So, well, I can't wait for him. There's much that you have to learn, much the Lord has to do with you. Many ways he has to blend you. Sometimes a person may be qualified, but they're not ready psychologically because, as Paul says, if they get in there too young, they might be lifted up with pride and fall into the condemnation of the devil. So the Lord has his timing, and when he's ready, you'll know it. You'll know it. So meanwhile, you just be at peace. Now that's where I think the comfort comes in this passage. Instead of rushing off to be a great Christian, just put yourself in the Lord's hand. Say, look, Lord, here I am. I don't know what to do with me. I can't run my own life, much less reach out to anybody else. But here I am. You do with me what you want. And then be at peace about it. Don't get fussy and antsy about it. Just be at peace. Let the Lord do with you what he wants. Meanwhile, you expose yourself to the group, through Christ, the Word, and let the growth take place. Let all the bitter experiences that you have blend together with the more pleasant experiences, and let him put that stew into the proper proportion. Instead of stewing around, let the Lord put you in the stew. Even though I have spoken to you often of the conflict in the faith, yet the scripture says that the Lord has called us to peace. He's called you to peace. He certainly wants you to be at peace about your relationship to him. You may be in great conflict and turmoil in your circumstances, but he wants you to be at peace inside. And I know of no better way to get to be put at peace than to just present yourselves to him and let him do the shaping up and the directing.